Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. It's Dan. I have John with me. And after 5 seasons in one game, it's some of you may be coming to us live on video stream.
We're finally putting our, I guess we're going on the YouTubes. We're going on, do you know how to post videos to Facebook, Dan? I don't know.
I do like the Zoom backgrounds. I feel like you can kind of come together with a good custom background. I even went with the little Red Grange helmet action, but our audio listeners are not getting the same treatment.
No, but there's a nice little Easter egg for those who are watching this live, because they get to see the fun spelling of this little thing going on here. Shout out to Dan for giving me a fun little background. But yeah, we got to iron out a couple things as we're going to talk about in the coming days and weeks, I'm sure.
All right, 52-3, John. Instant gut reaction doesn't matter.
Vegas always knows somehow, some way. 48.5, and you get at 49. That's just that's why there's still buildings in the desert.
It was, I don't know, hard to take away too much from it. I thought a few guys stood out, looked good, but it's Western Illinois. You're supposed to win, like you said, 48.5 point favorites. It's like, what are you going to take from that game? Duke's obviously the game that matters and the game where we'll learn pretty much everything. So I don't know, anything stand out from the Western Illinois game?
No, I think it's one of those where it's kind of like, it can only hurt your analyses. Like, that doesn't really help anything with, you know, your player evaluations. Like, I'm not putting a ton of stock into anything. There are some good indicators. Like, yes, Justin Bowick getting a bunch of touches and opportunities and touchdowns, that's great, because that's sign of progress that we didn't really get insight into because of obviously the closed practices and not having as much detail on that. But I'm also not going to say that, like, yes, he's destined to be the number one or number two wide receiver, because a bunch of other guys got opportunities as well. And I think it's like pretty much only Hank Beatty that you can write in pen any kind of like consistent grouping for him. But otherwise, it's like, yeah, I guess the big takeaway is that you were finally vindicated. That's how did we not lead with that? We were so excited about the video content that we forgot to the one shining moment for yeah, my guy Hank Beatty, but your call, your thing that you've been standing on for, you know, almost a year, it seems. And we finally got that punt return, which my question to you is, does it feel lessened at all because the punter like gave 10% of an effort on that tackle?
No, I was...
I mean, you and I could have made a better attempt at a tackle there. I'm just being honest. Like, yes, we're 30-year-old men, but like, come on. Like, I mean, once again, I'm happy, but like that dude just kind of like laying it up there and like not even really forcing any contact. He was just like, all right, maybe I get in front of him. It was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that was a weak effort. I will say, I think 50% of the credit for the punt return touchdown goes to me, 50% to Hank. I think that's only fair.
Mm-hmm. And I think he agreed.
Yeah, the punter not really giving much of an effort, and just Hank lowering the shoulder and just realizing, oh, this guy's not even trying to tackle me, finding his way into the end zone. Definitely an epic moment. No longer the longest drought in college football without a punt or kick return touchdown. We love that. And yeah, I mean, Hank Beatty, heck of a showing. But is he a non-con killer, or is he going to be, you know, the real deal come the big game this week?
Yeah, and I think last year versus South Carolina was a great indicator of like kind of the role he can step up into. But the fact that he's keeping the Mo rolling on special teams is great too, because that's kind of like how I feel like he got started. He had moments, I feel like, the past couple years, but this was something where he truly just was like, all right, I'm taking that next step. And yes, it's Western Illinois, but still like having that confidence. Also just kind of like, see, it's great having a guy where, I mean, I don't know about you, but obviously the game is pretty out of reach at that point, but getting excited because you see the play developing and I'm just like going crazy and I'm with my girlfriend's family and they don't know, understand why the score is so different, but I'm getting excited about this. And I'm like trying to explain to them in 3 sentences what's happening, but it was just amazing that we got that. And it's not kind of it's not bittersweet at all, because getting that monkey off your back is fun, but the fact that it happened in game one, now I want more, Dan. I want every week. We need to have a special teams touchdown.
I need to start coming up with more obsessions. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, obsessed with winning 12 games in a year.
When was our last safety? I don't know. Last year? We had one last year?
We had the Kirby Joseph gunner when Nebraska just threw the ball
Oh yeah.
forward while they were getting tackled on that punt return. But then there was
Yeah.
also, was it North Carolina, the game you and I went to in Lovey's first year where we had the safety. It was maybe, I don't think it was Kenyon Jackson, but whoever it
Carroll
was.
Phillips.
Yeah, something
I
like
don't
that.
know.
We've had some sa good safeties
No, you
on
know
it.
what we had last year, I think? The Rutgers game, Pat Bryant, after we scored the touchdown and there was 2 seconds left, I think they did the fumble-rooski play and I
Yes,
think threw it out of the back of the end zone. So I think technically we did have a safety last year. Because it was a weird score, but that actually then I think made it not a
It
weird score.
normalized it. Yes, it did. It did.
Yeah. But yeah. Heck of a game, Western Illinois did what you're supposed to do. I will say my biggest takeaway, or I was most impressed with Tomiwa Dorjiae. I thought, I mean, in rewatching the film, he was unbelievable. Made several plays. I thought Daniel Brown, he's so fast. The fact that he can get into the backfield in like a blink of an eye is exciting because you already have Gabe Backus. You know he's going to command attention. So if you have a couple other guys like this, James Thompson Jr. played really well as well. Like, we're going to be a force on the defensive line. And, you know, I think you'd agree that defenses that are strongest are the ones that have start up front with serious talent. So having those guys looking good gets me excited because that was one of my question marks coming into the season.
Oh yeah, and I feel like especially for how seasons start, I feel like defenses usually have the upper hand just because you're integrating new guys into offensive systems that need to know, not only where they're going on that given play, but where everyone else is going on a given play. And sometimes when you're getting new personnel, it's timing and all that good jazz. But for the defense, it's a little bit simpler because you only have so many zones you can go to. You only have so many gaps you can slash. And these guys have been in the system, save for the defensive linemen. So it was good to see them getting a nice start to their Illini career. And I think that actually plays in perfectly to kind of like, I don't know if you want to jump right into Duke, but as we talk about Duke, that's going to be the biggest thing, I think, because Manny Diaz, known as a defensive guru, and Barry Lunny kind of having his success that he's had. Like, yeah, that's a great matchup to watch, but they just paid a Tulane quarterback millions of dollars to kind of put them over the top. And so then the defensive effort that we saw against Western, is something that hopefully can be replicated fairly easily against I don't want to say a super high powered, but at least a potent Duke offense that, is going to be trying to get up and after it and fast and scoring a bunch of points and then putting pressure on you with their defense.
Are we over Manny Diaz, Miami Manny Diaz, and his Twitter antics from Jeff Thomas era?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he still kind of has that little like slime ball, grease ball quality to him that I would love. It's kind of like the AJ Pierzynski effect of like, I hated him when he was on the Sox, but I understand that he was like the kind of guy that you love to have on your team. And I feel like it's kind of similar with Manny Diaz or even like some of these other guys, like even the same thing with Fleck. I think I've said that before, like not really a huge fan of him, but if he was the coach of Illinois when all that turmoil was going on and he had ascended to the head coach position, like, yeah, I'm sure I'd be all about whatever silly gimmicks he'd be making up as a result of being the Illinois head coach that aren't just like, row the boat and all those good things. But Manny Diaz, he's a great defensive mind and he's, proven it. And I kind of like that he's settled in the ACC. I feel like that kind of suits him. I know that he had the chance in the ACC at Miami, but that's just like blue bloodish territory, and I don't think he's quite there yet. He might need a little bit more seasoning, or maybe he's just not that good of a coach, but I think this is kind of like the perfect spot for him. So I'm on him in the sense of like if I was objectively viewing him or betting on him or just like analyzing the seasons of ACC football, but for this specific instance, I can still drum up enough hate that I'm not looking forward to him being on the other sideline.
What was it? The raccoon stealing away Jeff Thomas? Was that the video?
Yeah, it was the well. He like either retweeted or quoted because someone made the raccoon stealing food from a kitten or something like that. And yeah, it was just a head of Jeff Thomas that was yoinked away from the Illinois logo. So don't necessarily love that, but at the same time, that's the fun thing is now we get to laugh at it because he got fired. He had to become a DC, which is also funny too that he has experience against this Illini squad, and in terms of like just purely a defensive look. but that it's still a lot of the same personnel from a couple of years ago. So that's going to be, honestly, it worries me a bit because he is so good defensively and because there's still so much of the same personnel. Now, granted, of course, like we talked last week about the progression and how it's not linear, but how you would still expect there to be progression over multiple years. But like, that was one game where it was like, I'm not really feeling great about Luke's prospects this year. But he's older, he's better, he's wiser. He will hopefully, be able to go out there and perform adequately, if not spectacularly.
I'm slightly distracted by the brick behind your shoulder. Can you explain to the people the Illini brick that is incorporated?
I might have it still some it's it might be in my car actually, because I was bringing it around for some testing. But this brick is an offshoot here. I'll take the Packers brick, which I know will make some people angry, but Dan was kind enough to get this for me a couple years ago for my birthday, because
Not a real brick.
it's not a real brick. It's very, you don't squish the brick, but you can squish the brick. I'm very neat in that way, even though it's a throwable brick. But this is like a copy of the Illini version of that, and it's just because sometimes I get a little animated and want to throw something, but not actually. But this gives me an outlet to throw something, or to at least have the ability to throw something. So it makes me feel better about myself, and that's just Dan being a good friend there. But yeah, it's being memorialized in this nice image right here. So we'll just actually, maybe what we should do, what would be a fun meme, is if we just like keep adding a brick for every single win, and I've just
Stacking
got
bricks.
stacking bricks in the bookcase. That'll have to be the season long bit.
John's fidget brick. Did that brick get tossed at all during game one?
Not
Maybe
even
Caleb Patterson
looked
on a
at.
deep ball getting burned?
No, that was more of just like, I'm not even mad, I'm disappointed type thing. That's not even worthy of a brick look.
Yeah, Western Illinois isn't deserving of the brick.
No,
Duke
that
will be, though.
exactly. Yeah, Duke and man, it's going to be a good test, and I don't really know how I feel about them, because they have a lot of high-end talent, and they've got a very good coach, and they've got a coach who's familiar with the Illini. So like, these are all a bunch of things that it makes sense why the line is only, 2.5 or 3, depending on where you're looking. But like, it for the number 11 ranked team going into an ACC venue where the ACC was historically bad last year, and I mean, maybe you say some of the top end talent change for programs like Florida State and Miami, but like, Duke is just sneakily chugging along and providing good seasons, and that's something where, I would be lying if I said I'm not scared at all. But I think that this will be a great test for Coach B and the tenor of the season.
Yeah, this is the test. I feel like we'll know so much about this team after this game. I know next week will kind of be the tune-up for Indiana, and we'll learn, a lot that in that game as well. But this is the one I've had kind of my eye on, as which way is the season going to go? Are we going to be a, 8-4 team, or are we legitimately a 10-2 type of team? And I feel like this is the test. You're getting it on week two, which, if your teachers give you a test on week two, usually, I don't know, it's a little nerve-wracking, but I like that we have a lot of returning players, a lot of returning starters. I feel like you kind of start the season, hit the ground running versus teams who are working through their lineup. So we talked about this in the season preview, but having this game early in our schedule, I think, is favorable for us.
Yep, and I wish it'll be a great test, because it's gonna show like the top end nature, because this is a good team, but it also plays a very, I would say, fun style, in the sense that it's not just like, oh, this is kind of like a sneaky, non-power two opponent that has accrued enough talent and has good enough coaching. But they also play like a fun style. They play very fast and aggressive on offense. They play super aggressive on defense. Like, it's going to expose the holes in the Illini, as maybe not as often as it would like, but more than you're going to get from other non-conference tests. And that style of play maybe isn't found too much in the Big Ten, but it still will, be a good measuring stick of, how would you play against the big boys? How is it going to be when USC comes into town and they have a more high-powered offense that's trying to go fast? How is it going to be against Ohio State, where they have dynamic talent and dynamic scheme on both sides of the ball? And you're getting like almost like a mini test of that right now. So that's where I'm glad that we have it early. I'm glad that Western, was as good as it was. There were some, I think, worries there that maybe Brandon Henderson was hurt or, whatever have you with that. And it seems like it was just a simple disciplinary issue. I know you and I both were scared about Melvin because that's, the key, one of the biggest cogs and probably one of the more underrated aspects when you're talking about a national presence. But getting out with, just some minor bumps and bruises and getting ready for get some live contact ready for Duke is good in my opinion.
Yeah. And the Duke game, Duke Elon, watching that, it was interesting to me because the first half, I think the score was tied 10-10 at the half. And I still, in watching that, thought Duke kind of dominated the half and they made a few mistakes, a turnover in the red zone. I think there was a 3rd and 20 for Elon. They let Elon convert that on a handoff, a draw play up the middle. Guy made a couple moves, broke a few tackles, got loose. So it was a little bit of sloppiness on Duke's part. And then the second half, Duke turned it on. I think they scored 35 points in that half and looked really good. So I guess we'll see if we get the sloppy Duke, we get the, well-oiled machine Duke. But Darian Mensah is one of the best, I would say, in looking at our schedule, probably the best quarterback that's on our schedule. Drew Aller's maybe the only other guy I would think could be better than I. Than Mensah, but we don't play Penn State this year. So Darian Mensah, I even pulled NCAA football 2026 player ratings just to compare. And I think they had Fernando Mendoza at like an 86 overall. Luke's like an 89 overall. Darian Mensah's an 89 overall, and then Drew Aller was a 90 overall. So if we trust EA Sports, it's in the game. Then Darian Mensah, one of the better quarterbacks, and he throws plenty of deep balls. I think he was 3rd or 4th in the nation last year throwing or com with completions over 20 plus yards. He was chucking it. And after some miscommunications in our game against Western Illinois, I have a little bit of concern that, Mensah is able to get those, have enough time to get those balls thrown downfield. He reminds me of our guy, Brennan Armstrong of Virginia, another ACC school with a guy who just chucks the ball downfield. And I worry a little bit about those deep balls this week.
Going back to your original point in terms of like the slow start for them, I think that it was probably just a more elongated version of what we had against Western, where it was kind of, a little bit sluggish. Maybe you were underestimating your opponent for the first couple drives. And then we came out and we just put it on them. I think it was much of the same with Duke. I don't really see many, holes in their game. Obviously the mental mistakes, the turnover inside their own red zone, that's something where yeah, maybe they give that to you because, and I think that that might be more of a byproduct of their play style, just because if you're go go go, it sometimes it's super beneficial, but you're trying to run your mesh point super quick, and your running back is trying to think of what hole he's trying to hit at this play point in this given moment, and because you're going so fast, then he kind of forgets not, to take the ball, but then there's enough confusion that then ball's on the turf and you're turning it over. So that's one of those where maybe that works against them and that's just intrinsically part of their play style. So that's something you can capitalize on. But I think, yeah, it was just a slow start akin to what we had against Western Illinois. In terms of Darian Mensah, yeah, it's just he is getting paid, I think, $4 million this year for a reason.
Yep.
And it's one of those where I'm not so scared of him because I loved what happened last year with Lenore Sellers, who, at the end of last year was getting a lot of Heisman talk about 2025 and not necessarily a dark horse, but kind of one of those guys that everyone was projecting to be a top five Heisman guy for 2025. And we went out and neutralized him. Some of that you could say is because of the OC change. Some of that was just because of personnel. Maybe some of it was desire. But I do love the fact that Aaron Henry has that kind of in his bag in terms of you have this one guy who is going to beat you, and the skill around him is very good, but it's more of a byproduct of the man in the behind the center. And even like Penn State, you could maybe say something similar, but they had such dynamic running backs, and they had Tyler Warren, who could have probably led them to 9 wins just as a quarterback himself alone. So it's something where like you had to account for those elite weapons. And you have some very good weapons at Duke, but similar to South Carolina, it's nothing so overwhelming that you can't just try and take away the quarterback. So that's what I think I'm going to be looking for is, do they implement some similar strategies? They were playing a ton of man against Western, and to your point, that's, I think, one of the bigger concerns is that, you had a couple guys getting burned deep or burned more often than you would like. Do we revert back to more zone looks and not just playing aggressive man? You can probably get away with that against Western, but is it something where against Duke you maybe get a little more conservative or you just play smarter?
Yeah. On the O-line, I will say Duke, it's very interesting because they're pretty much split literally down the middle in terms of who's good and who's not. The right side of their line is great. The left side, they had an injury to their left guard going into the season. He's not going to play. So their backup, he struggled last week. And then their left tackle graded out as one of the worst left tackles in the country last year. He's back starting at left tackle. So I think we're going to overload the left side of that line and, hopefully try to overwhelm Mensah, get in the backfield before he has a chance to take those deep shots downfield. But the right side of their line is very solid and should be an interesting matchup. That's probably what I'm keying on most in this matchup.
Well, and to your point, talking about Tony and JTJ and the fact that Gabe can just continue to wreak havoc, like that's something where having that much quality depth across the front four is so important because you can just impose your will on one side of the line, but you're not necessarily giving something up on the other side. So you're playing that advantage and that mismatch, but there's not as much of a downside as it was, maybe in a year where you only had Johnny and Keith was hurt and you could maybe scheme something up on the interior, but your exterior rushes were not as elite. Or on one side, you could really account for something because he was getting double or triple team, but you couldn't take care of it on the other side up the middle. So it's one of those where you bring up a great point. You should be able to take advantage of it. You should be able to get Mensah a bit uncomfortable, and that's going to be kind of the name of the game. If they're going quick and you can get them in a hole early enough, then he's going to have to sit there for, a second or two longer, and then you're going to be able to unleash Gabe to his fullest, and that's going to be something that, doesn't work out for opposing teams that often.
Before we get into our players of the week and score predictions, I want to ask you about our running back rotation. What'd you like? What'd you not like? Week one with Laufrey, Fagan, Valentine, all kind of getting a pretty equal share of carries.
I'm glad that Aiden left off, from last year and continued his momentum from, I know that a lot of it was captured in one long rush and somewhat garbage time. But it's still good to see him have that big playability and see him get some chunk plays as well. It was good to see Caden get back. I think there's still some, I don't want to say limitations to his game, but some things as a running back that he's still learning that the injury probably took away from him a bit. In the same way that Aiden, he was maybe more of a natural runner and had a bit better vision, but it's something that he definitely had to develop over the past couple of years that he didn't have when he got to campus. And so I'm hopeful that that's something for Caden, that he stays healthy this year so that he can continue to develop that. And then with Khalil, I think he just naturally has that. His running back instincts are just better than the two of them, but he doesn't quite have the I don't want to say game sense, but just everything yet to put together that complete RB1 or RB2 kind of season. So it's good to see that he's there as kind of, your safety valve. And maybe he does turn an RB2 this year, depending on how the other two perform. But I think it's good to see them give them a nice amount of equal carries and see a pretty similar yardage distribution. But I think, when all is said and done, it's probably going to be Aiden and then maybe even Khalil number two with Caden kind of nipping at his heels. But Caden's ability to just be a difference maker in the pass game with his speed, I will never forget him outrunning Tyler Newbin against Minnesota. Like that's just something where outrunning an NFL safety is very rare. So I'm not taking all the eggs out of the Caden Fagan basket, but definitely need to see him progress. And this will be a good test in terms of, is he able to kind of do something more than just have one cut, fall forward a little bit, but not really get up to speed.
Yeah, Caden's the king of pinballing off his own linemen and falling forward. He's so good at falling forward and getting those extra 2 yards at the end that, I mean, even if he's having a hard time finding the hole or, his vision's not as, tuned in as it could be, he has moments where I'm like, he shows those flashes of athleticism where you really have something there that could be special. But my takeaway was how impressed I was with Khalil Valentine. There were a couple times watching the film where I'd pause it where he had to make the decision of, whether to bounce it or find the hole. And he's so good at just making the right decision in those moments. And it probably helps that he's small and can just weasel his way through some of these little, tiny gaps. But I was a little bit concerned because I'd say for the first 2.5, 3 quarters, I was a little bit disappointed in our specifically run blocking. I thought pass blocking, JC Davis, I'll go down an entire different tangent of how good and solid he is. And just knowing you have, I watched every rep he played and he didn't make a single mistake. He was fantastic from start to finish. But run blocking wise, the rest of the line, I had a little bit of issue with not really, dominating to the extent that I thought they would until the third, fourth quarter. And, we wore them down and we out physical them, but a little bit disappointed in the run blocking. That gives me a little bit of concern going into this week. But having a guy like Khalil Valentine, who's able to kind of make something out of nothing, is a great trait to have in your running back room.
He's much like Chase in that sense, where he can make a bad run block scheme look right, and he can also make himself right in the sense of like maybe you do have two options and one is better than the other and you don't choose that, but he's just a good enough natural runner that he makes himself right in terms of getting extra yards and making a big play. I do agree that it stinks because like that was the whole thing that you were hoping wouldn't happen this year is because last year started off so moderately with the interior line in terms of their ability to run block and even sometimes pass block, but specifically run blocking, they weren't quite there, and that progressed over the course of the year, and it they got to a pretty good spot, but you were hoping that they would either not fall back to where they kind of were or just plateau and ascend a little bit, and it doesn't necessarily seem like they've taken that next step, and that's not to say that they can't earlier than they did last year, but just something where it's going to be probably a problem area or just an area to keep observing, especially in a game like this. This will be a good test because you have some very quality talent. Manny Diaz is going to be very aggressive with run fits and run blitzes, and once again, he knows these guys and he probably understands that there's been some progression, but you still have the same guys out there with some of the similar limitations that he probably scouted back when he was at Penn State. And that's something that is going to be keyed in on for Duke's defense continually. So yeah, I think it all kind of goes hand in hand with the running backs. I don't think their effort was necessarily poor, but I think it's kind of a byproduct of, yeah, the run blocking not being where it should have been. And that definitely needing to take a step sooner than later.
All right, should we just go right to players of the week? Who you got this week?
I have my guy, Colin Dixon. I guess they're all our guys, but I've just ever since there are like a couple guys that I just know from like the recruiting days. Like Colin Dixon, he comped so well to Julian Fleming, who was a five-star who went to Ohio State. We actually kind of flamed out, but we're not going to talk about that. But just in terms of big physical receiver who in high school making that jump fairly easily. I know that he probably didn't have the game against Western that he wanted, but this is going to be something where he has to step up, especially if it's what we just talked about. The running game might not be there, and it's something that they're going to want to lean on, and they should want to lean on because they need to figure out the wide receiver rotation, and the tight ends and the running backs need to pick up the slack. But if they don't, which they might not be able to because they're still gelling on the offensive line, which sounds crazy that five returning starters or four returning starters and a semi-suspended Brandon Henderson, like these are things that should not be taking 3 quarters of a game against Western Illinois to figure out. But if that's the case, if it did take that long for it to get figured out against Western Illinois, well then is it going to take an entire game against Duke for them to even figure it out at all? And so then if you're not figuring it out in the run game, then that means that you're going to need to look at the passing game. And so all that to say is I think that Hank's going to be the guy that they key in on, as they should, because he's the most proven, the most consistent commodity in that wide receiver room. But I think it provides a great opportunity for Colin to kind of get his and get back on track and make some plays, not only in the run blocking game, but maybe in the screen blocking game, maybe even with the screen himself. Just something, look for something early that gets him kind of on track and gets him moving a little bit earlier in the game than they did against Western, and maybe he gets a catch or two, even if it's just a simple hitch or a simple slant, and then maybe he takes off from there.
He must have been learning, well from Pat Bryant, because the blocking is arguably his best skill set as a receiver. And that's, not every wide receiver in college football can say they're a good blocker. Most, I would say, aren't, but he's an exception in this case. And I don't know, what do coaches always say? No block, no rock. So.
I was about to cut you off, but you did it for yourself. So yeah, no block, no rock. He personifies that for sure.
I like that pick. I'm gonna go on the other side of the ball. I kind of alluded to Darian Mensah taking deep shots, and I'd say the king of lurking on the deep ball and kind of baiting those deep balls is Myles Scott. So I'm gonna take Myles, and I'm gonna give me a Myles Scott INT this week. See if we can keep my string of predictions alive. But he invites those deep balls, and then the wide receiver to defensive back skills. He's got ball skills. We've seen him hawk a couple last year on those seam routes. So I could see him making a couple big plays. And I kind of think to win this game, we're going to need to create, I'd say, over 1.5 turnovers. So yeah, 2+. That's kind of where I'm at. So give me Myles Scott this week.
Couldn't be more aligned, and hopefully it's something where even if it's like a simple special teams play, do we count a missed kick as a half turnover essentially? Like, does that get you to your 1.5? Like, if we get a turnover, maybe a turnover on downs, but then we get, maybe a 48-yarder that gets missed. How does that tally into the Dan Saladino math of needing to get 1.5 turnovers?
So like I guess it's situational, because if you go back to last week, Western Illinois, us getting a goal line stand that then they kicked on 4th and 2 down 35 points, on the 2-yard line, literally the 2-yard line, the saddest field goal of all time. To me, that's a full turnover. Like, that's a win. Even though we gave up 3 points, like morale-wise, I think that counts as a turnover in my mind. But if it's, I don't know, a guy misses a 50-yard field goal, I don't want to take credit for that. Or a guy missing a short field goal that is just a miss by the kicker. I don't think we can take credit for mishaps by their special teams. But if it is like a big third or a big 4th down stand, I'd say we can take at least half credit for something like that.
All right. Yeah, I'll take it. And honestly, that's kind of why I couched it last week with the score prediction and talking about the no touchdowns let up thing, like it was in 2022, because it just feels like some of these college coaches, to for whatever reason, they just love seeing points up on the board and they love attempting sad field goals. So I was kind of like, okay, maybe we can do something similar where we have a streak of just not letting up a touchdown in Memorial Stadium for every single game, or almost every single game, or continuing a streak through week 10 or something like that. So
What's
that's
funny
where.
is the 3 points arguably kept us out of the AP top 10 this week, because we missed it by a couple votes. And I think if you shut them out, the voters change their mind just a little bit. Like having a shutout versus giving up 3 points, I think in voters' minds is enough of a difference that we potentially, we're 11 right now, but we were, I don't know what it was, 5 votes back. I think South Carolina leaped us. So had we shut them out 152-0, the people who didn't watch our game and just blindly were like, oh, here's what my ranking it is this week, they probably would have seen the 52 zip shutout and been like, we'll keep Illinois there, or move them up one spot, which might have been enough, funny enough, to push us into the top 10. So I'd say that decision by the Western Illinois coach was one that potentially cost us from being a top 10 team.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll crack the top 10 without some kind of major upset, because I'm thinking about the big games, and Michigan and Oklahoma are not ranked above us, so that wouldn't really have any bearing unless somehow one team puts the other away and they shoot up the rankings. And then it's Kansas and Missouri, and those teams aren't ranked ahead of
Yeah.
us either. So that's something where I wish that, yeah, we had the benefit, but maybe maybe we really pound Duke and put them away, and then you somehow, notch a couple extra votes and get into the top 10. I don't know. I don't
I
know who
think if you
South
beat
Carolina
Duke,
plays.
if you beat Duke, in my mind, I think you move up. You're only a few votes behind them, because you're beating a legitimate, ACC team, whereas South Carolina plays, I believe. I don't think they play anybody noteworthy this
No,
week.
I don't think so either.
So I think they give you the edge because you beat a proven, a opponent that's an SP, whatever they are, 35 or something like that. So I don't know. I
Yeah, I
think
feel like the
we get
SEC
the
bias
edge.
is still strong, though. That's something that, those AP voters, they do love their not even big names, because SEC is not a big name, but just that SEC potential future, they'll be up in there, and that whatever. I'm just maybe we'll get a big upset, and somehow we'll find our way into the top 10, and we'll be good to go, and we won't need to worry about griping about it. But let's just beat Duke first and foremost, because we'll find our way into the top 10 at some point if you take care of business.
My side tangent is with those AP voters, I think there were three I saw that did not have us in their top 25. Like how can one justify that a team that finished, beating South Carolina 10 wins last year, finished in the top 15 of the AP poll, returning majority of the start. Like, where could someone possibly, what's their angle other than just like, I don't trust Illinois historically? Like it makes no sense.
It's so weird, because you have to have like that human element, because when they put the computers to work, or when it's all just like kind of a future facing or gambling kind of metric, it's gonna discredit a team like Illinois that should perform well enough to be in the top 25 over the balance of the season. But at the same time, it's like you can't be having these guys that are just in like podunk, I don't even want to know, podunk California. Because like there are some guys who just like don't even watch games but have an AP vote, and they're just chilling in California watching a couple West Coast games and voting and not really caring, or East Coast guys, or even it's kind of like you have these weird regional biases. So I'm not necessarily super surprised that you have three voters leaving us off, but at the same time, it's like you're just kind of showing your hand that you don't know ball, like that, or that you just don't love ball, and that's the biggest thing. That's not even a me trying to shame them. That's me feeling sad for them, because if you and me were given that opportunity, that'd be something that we would take to heart, and we wouldn't even just be like, oh, we got to build out our models, and it's like, no, we'd use our eyes, and we'd be able to put together a good ballot, and it might not be perfect, but like these guys who just mail it in because they're getting paid 40 grand a year, and they're in their 50s, and they're not gonna be able to retire, and they're sad about that. I feel bad for them. I feel bad they don't love ball enough that they can't justify that. And if they have to live their petty sad existences, well, that's not my problem. That's theirs. And if they want to take, it for granted that they have an AP vote, be my guest.
Couple ball knowers like us. Couldn't be us not having
No.
Illinois in the top 25. In
Never.
an
Never, never.
unbiased Illinois podcast, I would say we're
Yeah,
legitimately a
don't
top
pay
15
attention to
team.
any of this. Yeah, no, we're not biased at all.
All right. Score predictions. We have Illinois 2.5 point favorites, 11 a.m. ESPN, first road game of the year. Talk to Robert. If you ever met Robert, you probably know his one stat that he loves to harp on, which is Illinois in their first road game of the year, whatever our record is. I don't know, 1-19, something like that. Last year, though, Nebraska, Robert said he'd take his shirt off. He did it. We beat
Yeah,
him in overtime.
we got to get him to because now it's just we got to play on the voodoo of that and just like get him to do something else, and have him document it, because maybe that's what got us over the hump against Nebraska, and we need something like that against Duke, so that we can be ranked top 10. This is what it comes down to. We will be ranked top 10 if Robert does something crazy. So anyone who's listening to this, put pressure on him to document it. He can send it to us. We can put it in the pod. We can do whatever, but we need him to be talking crazy about something.
I don't know. Yeah, we need some sort of not punishment, like celebration, some high stakes celebration for Robert, where potentially a credential is at stake if he were to get caught. Maybe like a touchdown dance on the field, or like I don't know. Can Robert do the worm? Maybe he could do the worm.
Yes,
Trim his
try and
beard,
stay.
go bald. I don't know.
He has to stay in the stadium as long as possible. Like, he needs to get forcibly removed from the stadium. Like, there has to be a police report with his name on it, because he just wouldn't leave the
That one guy
stadium.
that on TikTok that does that, where he tries to stay in every stadium and for as long as he can, just exploring rooms he shouldn't be in.
Yeah. Well,
Maybe Robert
we'll
will
figure
take the
something
team
out.
flight home.
That would be fun. Yeah, that somehow, yeah. Or maybe he has to get into the equipment bus, like in the under like in the stowing area. He's just gotta get stowed.
All right, we got time to ponder that, but in the meantime, Score prediction. I'll let you go first. Are you seeing a win this week?
Yeah, I'm gonna go just because of the experience, just because Bielema has probably been harping on this, and he wouldn't admit this to any one of us, and he probably tried not to admit it much to the team either. But I'm sure there was times that he was thinking about Duke, or indirectly preparing for Duke, or indirectly preparing the team for Duke. And so this is something where you never overlook, the opponent you're playing on a given day, but you could tell that, they were pretty well prepared and handled Western, and he probably was thinking about Duke a fair bit. So with that experience, with his ability to when he has some time to prepare extra, Brett Bielema off a bye week is always good. I have full confidence that they'll come out and they'll limit their mistakes. I'm gonna go 27-21 Illini.
Does Western Illinois playing them count as a bye week?
I mean, it essentially did,
It
like the
might.
fact. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like you, he definitely, and even the extra day of prep. I know that Duke played a day before us, so they had 2 extra days of preparation. But just like getting guys in that habit, like after a live contact, after hitting someone in a different jersey, like getting them back into that rhythm and having the extra day to kind of sift through all that, I think that that's going to be something that bodes well for the Illini, and not only the long term, but just the sample size of this game against Duke.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Let me think about this. Here's where I'm at. I think after seeing Duke, especially in the first half of last week, and knowing us and our team's characteristics of taking care of the football, I think the mistakes are gonna be the difference. And I think we're the team that makes less mistakes. So I'm also gonna pick a win this week. I'm gonna go 24-20. Illinois, slight cover, and it comes down to us taking care of the ball. I think Duke's gonna have, several drives where they move the ball and look pretty good, and it'll be about, those 50-50 plays and whether or not we can convert on fourth downs and whether or not we can turn them over and be the team that doesn't make those mistakes in the red zone. So that's where I'm at, 24-20. I'm going to go ahead and pick a win, get us up to a 2-0 start as well, and see where this season rolls to.
It'd be unbelievable if we somehow find a way to pull this off. Not that it necessarily, I mean, obviously we're favored via Vegas, but like it still feels like this is kind of like the scene where you wake up and the dream's over, and okay, we're gonna lose to Duke on the road, and the team of Destiny Illinois that like we're hoping that this will be, wins this game. But like I think everyone's just conditioned to think that this is, yeah, in the back of their minds, everyone's thinking, we're going to get hurt again. It's not going to be as great. We can look forward to the rest of the season, but maybe this isn't quite the team that we thought it was going to be. You go out there and you get a win on Saturday, and it's going to, I think a lot of people are going to feel a lot more free and easy about, yeah, their Illini happiness. And that could be, something truly special.
Yeah, it's the reality check game, and if we do get through it, I hate to look ahead. Everyone's, every coach will tell you week to week,
But
can't start jumping ahead,
we
but we can
can.
look ahead,
We're
and
podcasters, yeah.
I'm looking ahead to a week 4, 3-0 Illinois against a 3-0 Indiana, because their cupcake schedule, as we know, is 3 guaranteed wins pretty much. If they don't, then that's an embarrassment on their part. But 3-0 Illinois against a 3-0 Indiana is an intriguing game week 4 if we can get through this one. So I'm hoping we can get the Myles Scott interception. We can push ourselves to victory. Robert can do his worm or dance or shave his head or something, and we're all feeling ourselves a little bit after a week 2 win on the road at Duke against Manny Diaz and his secret sub tweets, and get us off and running, because this team, you win this one, you start rolling, and things could get very fun very quickly.
I'm sure we have some Illini fans who live in the greater Durham area. If you have an extremely large handcuff that's like one normal, one huge, maybe we get Robert to handcuff himself to the goalpost. That is that what we do? Is it
That could
maybe
be.
if we get a then he's just gotta, or maybe handcuff himself to something in the stadium. I don't know why I'm
I
fixated
think
upon him being in the stadium, but I think We got to get something for him. We got to, and this has been a fun little creative sesh for the back half of the podcast, but we also got to get him involved because he's just got to do it. Like, if we hadn't brought up Nebraska last year, then I'd be kind of like, oh yeah, it was a funny bit, but like that broke the streak, and we need him. He needs to do his part. He needs to do his 1/17th.
I will say I made it this far, but I just remembered there is a very important thing I need to address, and that is Duke's Field. They have this little Blue Devil logo now at like the 35 or whatever, and I can't figure it out. Is that an alternate logo that's like they have the big D, your standard Duke logo at midfield, but I want to say like 2 points on both sides of the field. I think it's like the 35 or the 20 or something. They have this little blue devil. It's like in between the hashes and it's kind of creepy. And I assume it's an alternate logo of theirs that I just didn't know. Obviously, I know they're the Blue Devils. I've just never seen this little cartoonish, devilish little character that they have on the field. But maybe something with that with Robert. Like go spit on the devil.
Yeah,
Spit
smile at
on the
the devil.
devil.
Yeah.
Plant the
I mean,
flag on the
it's just
devil.
good vibes anyway. Yeah, I don't think you can ever go wrong, even if we lose, stomping on the devil. That seems like good karmic vibes regardless.
All right, let's leave it there. Appreciate everyone for tuning in to this episode of the Field Pass. 11 a.m. Saturday, ESPN, big one. Number 11. I want to say that another time. Number 11,
Feels so
Illinois
good.
football
So good.
playing Duke on the road in Durham. Should be a good one. We'll be tuned in. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Illini.